welcome to the Liturgist podcast. I'm Michael Gungor. Actually, I'm not Michael Gungor, and this is not the Liturgist. Despite the 6 minutes of conversation we just had off the air, I'm Ted Kluck. This is the Happy Rant podcast, and I'm joined, as always, in studio by my good friends and my partners in radio, Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. We have both of them in studio. Ronald is back, refreshed, renewed. His voice is full of life and energy due to the 2 weeks that he just spent on the road living an amazing life. Ronald, welcome back to the program. Do we need to do introductions? Because it's been a while.
Thanks, boys. I mean, you can always do introductions. I mean, we're the only podcast that doesn't do introductions. So I don't know what to say about that.
Yeah, tell us your name and where you're from and something unique about yourself.
Well, hi, guys. My name is Ronald Joseph Martin. I'm an Enneagram 4, and I live
everything in... is unique about you, then.
I live in Ashland, Ohio, which is a town of only me and my wife. That's how unique it is.
That's amazing. Yeah, definitely you and your wife, because your one neighbor moved away recently.
Correct.
So, yeah, population 2, Ashland, Ohio. Quaint little town. I've been there. But, Ronald, I would be remiss if I allowed the two of us to continue talking about ourselves, because we have a very special program.
Indeed. Absolutely.
We have the Barnabas Piper episode of the Happy Rant podcast.
Yes.
We have both done episodes in which we've been on the hot seat, but this is Pipe's morning. In our pre-production meeting, it came down to talking about this or talking about Jerry Falwell. We all came out resoundingly in favor of talking about Piper. And I, for one, am excited to kick this thing off. Ron, do you have, since you're fresh off the road back into the studio, do you have a question to get us started with Pipe?
Yeah, for sure. So, Pipe, how you doing, buddy?
It's a strong first question.
That's the question.
I am well. I'm doing very well. Thank you. Cool. Next
question.
We can
probably wrap this thing then.
Yep.
Are we good?
Was that nice? Yeah, hey, we've done what we always do on this program.
No, so here's my question for you, Pipe. I actually gave some thought to this, believe it or not. I'm not just winging it. Which is how I normally do almost everything.
You've had
in
some
life.
Time to devote to thinking, so that's good.
I have. I had 2 weeks, and it was really what dominated most of the convo between me and Big M as we were traveling through all the New England states. But here's what I want to know, man. I was thinking about your life. I was thinking about the uniqueness of your upbringing, which comes up a lot, which then always seems to pivot to your pop. But I want to pivot it back to you in the sense that I want to ask you this. What did you, as a kid, the sort of what I want to be when I grow up question, but given sort of the unique upbringing that you had, what were some things in your mind, either from an early to sort of like early teenage, coming out of high school age, that you thought, man, this is what I want to devote my life to. This is what I would like to do. And are you doing any of those things?
That's a much better question. That's a much better question than how are you, which was a nice first question, but not nearly as hard hitting. I imagine that you came up with that question while, breaking crab legs with a little wooden mallet or something like that. And so
I'm not a fish guy, but go ahead. Okay. Big M was doing that.
How much of his vacation did you see, Piper?
What's that?
Was it archived on like the gram?
If you go to Instagram, you get a real good sense of all of the things that you missed by not being on vacation with Ronnie and Big M. So it was, it looked glorious.
So you felt like you were on that vacation. So
yeah, except for being able to taste all the delicious food that he posted pictures of. That part I didn't get to partake in.
Like Spurgeon said, always post pictures of your vacation.
Yeah. Oh man, I love that. Was a great, great line from Spurge.
Just pastoral.
He's so quotable.
I like to bring it back to the real purpose of this.
We're never going to let Pipe talk.
No, we are too.
I honestly cannot remember. I was never a kid who had like a thing in mind that was, I'm going to be this when I grow up. I sort of ping ponged between things. When I was in college, I had two different roommates who were going to be doctors, and they had wanted to be doctors since they were kids, and now they are doctors. And so they just they had that sort of wiring. I was not that. I'd say until I started on staff at Emmanuel, I was still kind of in the, I don't really know what I'm going to do with the rest of my life. I know I've figured out some things that I'm good at, so maybe I'll try to do those things and see if I can get paid for them. When I was little, I wanted to be a professional athlete, which is unfortunate for an average height and above average girth kid. wasn't in the cards for me. When I was in high school and college, I strongly considered youth ministry. I did it for a while.
Did you get the Jesus fish tattoo anywhere on your body at that?
No, I scoffed at those youth pastors. So I had two amazing youth pastors growing up who were neither cool. They didn't try to be stereotypically cool, nor did they sort of overemphasize fun at the expense of, you know, actually discipling teenagers. But that made them way more fun because they were genuine, they were humble, they were likable. Both of them are still in ministry today, so they didn't kind of do the youth ministry burnout thing. And so they set a real high bar for me in my mind of what youth ministry could be like. And I thought, boy, if you can teach kids like that and be fun, you know, missions trips, camping trips, ridiculous pranks, like all of the crazy youth ministry stuff, but also, you know, real serious, we're going to walk through books of the Bible and really study and get up early and go pray together and whatever.
Yeah.
So that got its hooks into me for a while. And then I did youth ministry at a church and ran into some real significant issues with the church leadership. And got very jaded towards ever working at a church again. So that was probably at like age 23, 22. And then I didn't work at a church until for about 14 years. I knew that I did not want to be a pastor like my dad. In part because I just wanted no part in it. And in part because I looked at him and go, and to this day, I look at him and I go, well, I can't do what he does. Yeah. So I would like to stay out of that arena. And I had no idea. And it took a long time for me to even figure out what it would look like to kind of put my gifts into play in a professional manner that I didn't hate.
Dude, did that feel weird at Wheaton, along with all these like future doctors? And how snobby was Wheaton is basically how insufferably snobby was Wheaton compared to other like insufferably snobby settings that you've been in your life?
I managed to connect with a group of people who were like, they fit the Wheaton bill in terms of their academic chops and their all American kidness, et cetera. But they were not pretentious D-bags.
So there
was a fair number of those there. There was also a fair number of like your trust fund baby stuck up future, you know, gonna run a finance company on, you know, down in the loop in Chicago or whatever. Yeah. And, I think I did not fit because I had no drive whatsoever. There were not a lot of kids who made it through Wheaton who just didn't care that much. And, I was one of them.
Interesting.
I just didn't, I only wanted to do the things that I liked. I had no sense of like, oh, you do the hard work in the classes that you think are stupid because that's what it takes to get ahead. I was like, why would I study geology? I don't care about geology. I don't care about math. I don't care about a lot of them. Why would I study them? Which, for the record, is not a great attitude. But I
was the same way, Pipe. We would have been great like roommates in college.
Yeah, terrible for each other, but had a lot of fun, I'm sure. So yeah, I had more fun in college than I did like gain academic ground. My college record was not stellar.
Well, so, Pipe, let me ask you this. Let me hit off that for a second. So what about – so for the profs there that knew who you were, was there like a particular expectation? Were they like constantly bringing you into their room saying, hey, I've noticed you don't really like geology that much, and that's problematic if you want like a career, you know, as a celebrity pastor, you know, or whatever. Did you get that kind of feedback from them?
Now, you know how there are like drug rehab clinics for famous people or famous people's kids, and they just sort of know there's a set of rules on how you interact with these people who have, you know, they're exceptionally well known. Wheaton is a little bit like that for the evangelical world. They don't call out the children of well-known evangelicals. I only remember that happening a couple times, and it wasn't negative. It was positive. Okay. One was a New Testament professor who, you know, that we were going to be talking about passages about men's and women's roles in the church. And of course, my dad co-authored Recovering Biblical Manhood and Womanhood, which is sort of like the seminal complementarian book that egalitarians hate with every ounce of their being. And so he pulled me aside after class the week prior and said, hey, this is going to be coming up next week. You don't have to come to class if that makes you uncomfortable, because I'm sure your dad will come up and I don't want you to be like spotlighted on this. So, and then there was maybe one other instance, but it was, again, somebody who knew my dad and had, they had more of a relationship. And so, yeah, there's Wheaton does a pretty good job of just treating people on their merits, not their last names. And my merits didn't deserve to be treated like much of anything. So I didn't get special treatment at all.
Interesting. Yeah.
Now, Pipe, was your did it cause a lot of consternation for your dad, who strikes me as like uber motivated, like the most motivated person, the most intentional person? Did it bother him that you just kind of jacked around it with college?
Yes. the short answer is yes. And he's not like a get all over, you know, once we left the house, he, especially because I was the fourth child, so he had some practice at not kind of being nosy in his kids' business. I could tell that he was holding back a number of times when we would talk, or when I would go home, or when they would see my, you know, they would kind of find out how the semester went and be like, you had a what GPA? That's not even a whole number. and yeah, it really bothered him because he is all of the things you just said, in terms of like, he's the most grinder of any worker I've ever met.
Yeah.
I don't know how smart my dad is, like just in terms of innate intelligence. Like, I think he's very bright, but you can't tell because he never stops working. So you can't tell where like hard work makes up for lack of innate intelligence and where things just sort of click. He's a different animal when it comes to work ethic, which I think I've gained ground in as an adult, but still not in his department. Not even in his, like, I'm a single A ball player and he's, you know, he's an all-star when it comes to this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. To piggyback on that, and then I'll throw it to Ron again for another question, and not to make this all about your dad, but do you feel like your dad has learned anything from you in terms of enjoyment, rest, maybe not being super work oriented and motivated all the time? Or do you think he's ever gone through kind of a moment of existential crisis where he's questioned the veracity of his work or the importance of his work? You know what I mean? And I ask that with selfish motive because I go through that all the time.
I don't know that he's ever questioned the value of his work, because it's he can't, I mean, his work is not work for him. You know, I think for most of us, work is a thing that we do, not a thing that we are. Even if we have sort of our identity wrapped up in it, like in an unhealthy way, for him, his work is almost like the way the Apostle Paul talks about, like, I basically exist for the declaration of the gospel, the end. Yeah. That's the whole of it. And then it just sort of weaves its way into everything. There's a real similarity there. So no, I don't think he's ever questioned it. We have had some very blunt conversations, especially as I grew into adulthood and you kind of gain a little bit more confidence, a little bit more self-awareness, and a little bit more kind of moving away from the childish, like, I wish you were just more fun, Dad, into I think it'd be healthy if. And so we've had some pretty blunt conversations where I told him, I was like, I don't always want to talk about God. Sometimes it's fun to watch baseball or football or watch a movie or whatever. And
like, lightning came down from the sky.
Yeah. And I wasn't struck dead. So apparently he didn't use his prophetic powers to call out, you know, lightning or bears or something. And, but I've seen shifts, you know, I'd say since he retired from being a pastor, particularly, so that his schedule is a little bit more, moderate, he does take a lot more time when I'm in town to spend time with grandkids. And, you know, he's often the first one, you know, if we're up there in the fall, to be like, hey, are the Vikings playing today? Let's find a way to watch it together. Those kinds of things, which is awesome. It's great to see a 70 something year old man, continuing to grow as a person and as a parent. So, I think I've had some influence on him. I don't think it's ever caused him to question the value of his work. And I do wonder sometimes if he regrets having fun with me. Like, does he get to the end and go, I could have been using those 3 hours for something different? I don't think so.
Written but four pages.
But it's possible.
Interesting. Interesting. Ronald, what do you have?
Yeah, so let's pivot from your dad gets talked about a lot, Pipe. Tell us like two things that we would never know or guess that have influenced you about and concerning your mom.
Oh, that's a good question. I would say my wide-ranging appreciation for fiction books is entirely thanks to my mom. Like 100%. She just baked into our lives, especially, maybe not my older brothers, I would assume so, but especially mine, just stories. Like she would, we didn't have a TV growing up, not because my parents are like Amish weirdos, but just their stance was if we have a TV, we'll watch it and there's better things to do with our time. So let's do those things instead. And books were the majority of those things. And so, you know, if we were like folding laundry as little kids, so 6, 7 years old, sitting there folding a pile of laundry for four boys, she'd just read to us. So she'd read, she'd read books and she'd read books that were like all sorts of crazy adventure stories. And I remember like I learned what being drawn and quartered was from a book that she read us. Being put on the rack, all these things, you know, so that when I finally watched Braveheart, I was like, oh, I know this stuff. Mom taught me. Nice. And she would take us to the library. We had a little community library a few blocks away. We would go there once or twice a week. You know, she'd give us a limit on books, which tells you the kind of family we were when you have to limit the kids on books.
Yeah.
Right. And so, and then she just had an entire wall of mysteries. So Agatha Christie, P.D. James, I don't know who all the other Dorothy Sayers, et cetera, just these novel writers. She loved like your pulp English novels and just ate them up. So that would be a big thing that she did, that has had an ongoing, like I feel at home in rooms that have a wall of books. I go into houses that have no books and I just wonder what's wrong with people. So, that's a strong mom influence. And her bookshelves are way more interesting than my dad's. Like all of his Puritans and commentaries were much less, interesting to me. Let's see, what else did she do?
What are the odds your mom is going to buy Ronald's Christmas novel, his Christmas sweater novel, and love it? Do you think that's in her wheelhouse?
The one I can never get published, boys. Is that the one?
We're talking? Yeah, the one that you will get published, baby. Don't talk like that.
You know, I don't remember my mom ever reading anything that was overtly like feel good or romantic, which also might be something I picked up from her. Who knows? That doesn't seem like in her wheelhouse. I think the other thing, my mom is a great traveler. She's just a boss at, you know, if she gets a call from somebody at church who's like, hey, we have a team that's heading over to visit these missionaries in Thailand in 11 days. Do you want to go? She'll be like, yep. And then she'll figure out how to do it. And like, she's kind of got pre-packed bags, you know, just sort of, she just has,
she digs it. She loves like hitting the road.
Oh yeah. And as a kid, I hated it. Not necessarily that she would just travel, but like when we traveled, it was like, we're going to read every plaque at every scenic overlook and all this stuff. And it was so boring. But as an adult now, I'm interested in things that I thought were boring as a kid. And so I like to visit Civil War battlefields and I like to see like, why is that building a cool historic? And my kids are like, Dad, you're turning to grandma. Like, why are we doing this? And so I think just the awareness of history and adventure and the world is bigger than your neighborhood and your hometown. Those are all things that she instilled as well, just by how she lived. Like, I don't remember her aggressively teaching those things as much as just constantly doing them.
That's fascinating, dude. Yeah, that's really cool. Do you think she ever struggled with being a pastor's wife? I mean, especially like a high profile pastor's wife. I hear that being a pastor's wife is not easy, but I don't necessarily know the ins and outs of it, of course. So what did that look like for you guys?
Yeah, I think she did. Not like struggle in the sense of, you know, I'm going to throw in the towel, but there were a lot of struggles that came with it. I think she benefited. I'm guessing, I'm putting words in if she was telling the story, she might tell it differently. But when she was growing up, she did not want, she just steadfastly said, I want to do two things with my life. I want to travel the world and I don't want to marry a pastor. So then she married a pastor and was pretty sure it was going to kind of lock her into a small locale for the rest of her life. And instead it opened up all the doors to travel. And I think she really wanted to teach as well. And so she kind of gave up the travel teaching dream in her mind, and through being a pastor's wife actually opened the door to do more speaking, more teaching, more travel than she probably otherwise could have done. But she had the advantage of, she was married to my dad for 12 years before he became a pastor. And so there was a decent on-ramp of like knowing where he was headed, but he went into academia for 5 or 6 years before he moved into the pastorate. And so there was, they were able to kind of process that together and get to the place of being like, okay, we can do this thing. The other is that it was a smaller church when he became a pastor. So it was, that's a different sort of scrutiny, you know, where everybody's up in the pastor's business, but it wasn't a high profile thing. And so she was probably a pastor's wife for 15 years before he became any sort of high profile that mattered. And so again, there's sort of a foundation laid there where they had a pretty good sense of what it looks like to do ministry together, to be married together. But both my parents had talked about, I guess, I don't remember this because I was really little, but they went through a really rough stretch, like late 80s, early 90s. So probably 10 years into his ministry, I was, you know, 6 or 7 years old at the time. And just trying to figure out how they were going to make this thing work, the marriage, the ministry, all of it. But under the banner of like, well, we're not going to give up because that's not an option. Like, you just don't quit. And so they pushed through and saw it through, and God was gracious to them in it. But yeah, there was definitely hard days. And I've never heard my mom overtly say it because she's not a very expressive person in terms of strongly emoting. But I'm certain there are times she is just all the way fed up with the kind of being under scrutiny of being a prominent pastor's wife. Like, I've vented and she just sort of gives a knowing smile and is like, you can sort of see in her eyes, she's like, yes, I know full well what you're describing, but I'm not going to respond to this comment.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. That's funny.
Go ahead. No, go for it, baby. Go for it.
So I want to pivot, man. I want to get a little lighter, maybe a little more personal, Pipe. Describe to us, if you could lay out a perfect day for yourself, what would it look like?
A perfect day, like at this point in my life?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, not like 20 years ago, but okay. Yeah, like today. Just something that's realistic.
Yeah.
What's an incredibly from start to finish, like enjoyable day where you go to bed that night and you go, man, what a great day. What awesome day, every part about it.
I think so. The key ingredients for me to an awesome day, like let's call it realistic, not sort of traveling to paradise kind of thing. So exactly. waking up in the Nashville suburbs and having an awesome day are, I really like quiet mornings. So I like waking up early, but I don't love doing things with people early. I like quiet in the morning. So coffee, Bible, book, journal, just a couple hours of me being able to kind of get my head and heart straight and wake up before we move into people the rest of the day. And I do like people. So the rest of the day is with folks is great. I think the second ingredient is doing something with my family that they enjoy. I really, there are things that I really enjoy, but if my family feels like they're being dragged into it, so if my kids are like moping while I'm enjoying something, I'm not enjoying that thing. So it could be, like last Saturday, for example, we were at a lake with Lauren's coworkers, one of her teams. And so the girls spent the afternoon tubing and wake surfing and all this stuff and just had a blast. like that's a near perfect day, especially if I don't have to drive the boat. I can just like sit in the boat or sit on the dock with a drink and they have a ton of fun and I get to talk to people. If it's with close friends, that's even better. So a group of, you know, 6 or 10 people, not a huge group. I don't love massive parties, but love having friends around. The thing is that what doing that, whatever that thing is, it could be going to a baseball game. It could be hiking. It could be going to a lake, just sort of something active, but not like adventure sports, just fun outside. There has to be awesome food. So like one just amazing meal, whether it's like grilling for lunch or dinner or something like that, that's just everybody's enjoying food together. And then if the day ended with like sitting around a bonfire with those friends, having drinks and just talking and laughing until people get too tired to have coherent sentences anymore, that's basically an awesome, that's basically a perfect day.
Nice. So I like, so that kind of gives us insight into your personality a little bit, you know, in terms of people that have read your books or they're just listening to your pods and they kind of want to know what you enjoy or some of the things that make you tick. And like, I think you just described something that is very like simple and it kind of is something that sort of plays into, you know, the quietness in the happiness of your soul, rather than being all of these like, you know, entangled things that, that you feel like need to all come together for you to have a day that, that all makes sense to you and is enjoyable. So that's interesting. People might not realize that about you.
Yeah.
So.
I think there probably was a time, especially like in my 20s when I struggled with like FOMO, just the idea that I need one more thing to make like this day would be better if kind of adding, piling on. And I think I've just come to realize that there's so much more enjoyment and just sort of appreciating, like if everybody's happy and we've got that sort of like the foundational good times, we're doing something fun together. The weather's great. The food is great. The people are great. That like, what you can't really ask for a lot more than that. And so there is sort of, I think I've probably, I don't know if I would say arrived or grown into a place of like, it's like simple fun is way better than trying to pack a day with the perfect experiences.
Yeah, no, for sure. That makes a lot of sense. I dig that because I resonate with that a lot. You know what I mean? In terms of like, I think as you get older, like your requirements for what is going to sort of like give you some kind of enjoyment, they tend to like narrow and simplify. So it's interesting to hear you say that because I think I would have settled most of the same things at the end of the day, you know?
So Pipe, kind of hearkening back to this came to mind as you were talking about your mom and your dad. And, you know, Ronald and I have both been married to our ladies for a while. And you're embarking on a new marriage here. You know, we could both probably identify ways in which being married has opened up new opportunities for us and things that we never would have considered and ways in which our spouse has made us better that were unexpected. kind of looking down the road at a lifetime of marriage, to your new bride, like what are some ways in which you envision like that happening for you? That's sort of an obtuse question.
Yeah. But, well, you're stretching my imagination, my mind here, probably in a good way. I think, well, just at the foundational level, she's a, like, I just walk through life with a very loud devil sitting on one shoulder telling me to say things I shouldn't say and push the limits and generally be a jackass.
We would not have been good college roommates in that respect.
Right. We would have been terrible for each other and had so much fun and just destroyed things and gotten kicked out of school. Lauren is very much the conscience, the angel sitting on the other shoulder being like, maybe you should not say that and probably stop what you're doing right now. That would be wise. And not in a nagging way at all, but just in this, like, just a much better sense of, of what's a good idea and what's not. You know, and sometimes that's a joking thing. And sometimes it's much more like, I will get very angry about something and she will say, you need to sit this one out until you cool off. Mm. And that's what I need to hear. So that's probably not so much an opportunity as it is a protection that will, so to keep me from destroying stuff. But it's like a daily thing where there's some element daily where she speaks sense to me that I need to hear. And it's a miracle to me that I didn't make a wreckage of stuff prior to her doing that. I think in terms of opportunities, I've been amazed even just in the, so we've been together for about a year and a half and married for a month now. The way that friendships change so like friendships with couples, especially when, like, if she gets along with the wife and the other couple and I get along with the husband, that's just a whole world of friendship that changes there instead of it feeling like it's a very narrow thing. So I had a number of friends who I got along with the couple well, but of course I'm not really personal friends with the wife as a single guy. So it was like me getting together with the husband, us being buddies, us whatever. And now all of a sudden it has just expanded into this. There's just a whole other realm of friendship as couples. And I think it's not even adding people in terms of like, I don't have 14 more friends or something like that. It's just adding dimensions to the things that were already there that, that make those better. And yeah. I mean, and if you go to what I was just saying about like what my perfect day is, it just takes that day and makes it feasible because it would be hard for me to have a day like that without the kind of the whole realm of friendship that is like we get along great with them, not just I get along great with him kind of thing. So it, yeah. I think that's a huge thing, just the kind of the richness of those friendships. I think it's hard to imagine specifics, but it's not hard to imagine the possibilities of her saying, you know, something like, well, why don't you write about this? Or if I'm bandying about an idea that I'll probably never get to, for her to say like, well, why don't you just do it? Like, why don't you try that thing? And I don't know what those things are, you know, whether it's a branching out in writing or, you know, taking on some different sort of speaking or podcasting or whatever opportunity, for her to be the person who can kind of push me into that, where I might just never get around to it. I might not talk myself into it. I think the last thing that comes to mind is, you know, I'm working at a church and I feel like I've landed at a place where this is the thing that I look at and I go, yeah, I'll do this for the next 10 years, Lord willing. It doesn't feel like there's a shelf life on this. Ministry at a church is really different if you're not married. Like there's just a, there's not a ceiling on it. It's just, you'd navigate it very differently. And it expands pretty dramatically if you're married in terms of the kinds of people who you can minister to, the doors that are open, the way people view you, which is, that's probably kind of sad because I don't think we should view single people as, you know, less capable or less worthwhile. But I think that aspect, just sort of what doors will open in terms of ministry and serving people that couldn't have existed before.
Yeah, no, that's solid. Baby, do you have time for one more? I know we got to get you out of here.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm in. I'm all in.
Go for it, man.
I'm all ears.
Yeah, one more for the road.
Pipe, so here's my final question for you, man. When you look at, let's talk about your sort of your body of written work. So you have your fourth book getting ready to drop, right? What's the date on that one?
Little promo. October 1st. It's called Hoping for Happiness. So you can pre-order it now, folks. Go get that.
Nice, man.
Pick it up.
Amazon.com. Is that the little company that's carrying it?
Yeah,
right now?
I think it was really nice. Jeff Bezos was nice to reach out to me the same way he did to Ted Ted's little project.
Oh, and he's a great guy.
And just he was like, hey, it seems to have worked out all right for Ted. Maybe we can do something too. So Amazon.com.
No, he's good.
Jeff's a great guy to work with. He's
personal.
Really,
I'm getting lunch with him today, boys. It's he's a good guy.
That's where you're going. That's why you gotta hop off the pod.
Absolute. So Pipe, give us some insight, give your readers and your listeners some insight. What is the book that you have lodged in your head that you haven't written or that you think, man, I'm just not ready to write it. I would like to write it in 10 years, 15 years. I need to be older, or I'm not there yet with even thinking through it conceptually?
Yeah, that's a hard question to answer because every book that I've written is not part of a plan. You know, I didn't have a 4-book plan when I started writing. I had 1 book and then the publisher asked for 2. And thankfully in writing the first one, a second one kind of was born. And I went, oh, that's, I'm writing a book on being a pastor's kid, but there's a lot in here about faith and doubt. I can write that. And then that brought up question asking. I was like, oh, I can write a book about curiosity. And then that came up. And then I was done. I had no ideas for about 1.5, 2 years until this idea of happiness and expectations kind of crystallized. Mm. And so I have no idea. I don't know what's next. I don't think I'm done because I think I have sort of a compulsion to write, and not in an unhealthy way, but just it's a thing that I look at and I go, I have to do that. It's kind of a thing that I love it. I don't always love doing it, but I love the cumulative process. And I don't know that I'll ever write a magnum opus type. Like when I look at the way my dad writes, you know, he wrote Desire and God, and then every other book is a spinoff of Desire and God. I don't know how anybody does that. My brain doesn't work that way. That seems foreign to me. I would say the one thing that I have been sort of circling from a distance, kind of eyeing, wondering about, but absolutely petrified to start, is any sort of fiction or creative nonfiction. Mm. So either a memoir type thing, which scares me to death because writing bad memoirs is the worst, or fiction, because I don't even know how to write fiction. I just love fiction. And so I feel like if I love fiction as much as I do, and I love writing, to not try it would be, I don't regret much, but I think I would regret if I didn't try.
Yeah, yeah. For sure. You should co-write my Christmas novel with me, Pipe. You'd probably really enjoy that.
We do a co-author. You're always, on that. Always looking. Always, you know.
Always looking to only write half a book.
I like collaboration. I don't know what to tell you, boys. I mean, I thought that
you're
was a
collab
good thing.
Guy. You're a collab guy.
I mean, you know, it's half the writing, double the platform, half the money. But you know, there's give and take.
Absolutely, give and take. Baby, how's that other collab shaping up?
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Any word from our agent on that other thing that we were possibly dreaming up?
Big thing.
The thing behind the thing.
Yeah. The thing behind the thing.
Yeah. We'll talk off air.
Okay. Well, let's get off the air, dude.
Because there's things to discuss.
There's intrigue. I want to go a couple of minutes on that off the air. Boys, we've done what we always do in that we've interviewed Pipe for 37 minutes. Pipe, likable guy. Ronald, don't you think?
Yeah,
just
absolutely.
Easy to like.
Just very, very level, very even, a little cranky, but we'd expect that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Still getting over his bitter youth group upbringing. We understand that. That's a thing.
Wow. Yeah, we're getting back to that ethos that we had off the air before we hopped on.
I'm not blaming him for that. He had no choice in that.
Once somebody calls me likable, I feel like I'm not allowed to insult them back. Like I have to sit this one out.
What a great guy, Pipe, but he's just kind of a crank.
That was super verbal jujitsu of you. I'm very impressed.
It was. That's Yoda work, though. I mean, you know, that's kind of like spoken Yoda. Whoa. As opposed to Twitter Yoda. But boys, we've done what we always do on this program. We've wandered to and fro throughout some topics. And until next time.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Dedicating time each day to spend feeding our minds and our hearts the truth of God's Word is immensely helpful in our growth as followers of Christ. I'm John Stonge, and each day I host a show called Daily Devotions with Pastor John. On the show, I spend just a few minutes taking an applicational look at one or two verses of Scripture before coming to the Lord in prayer. If you'd like to make a habit of spending more time meditating on the truth of God's Word, you can listen to Daily Devotions with Pastor John at lifeaudio.com or on your favorite podcasting app.